we can just make things simple enough and streamlined enough that we made that, if we reduce the cognitive burden of deciding what to do with health insurance, you might not need that intermediary in the middle. If you answered all their questions and concerns using different sequences of web pages and better design and messaging and maybe better FAQs and help center documents, maybe you could create a self-serve checkout experience. Mm. And I'm sure that philosophy underlies a lot of design at Gusto. It certainly did at JustWorks. Like, how can you make things self-serve automated while still being as good and solving that user need?
Welcome to the SMB Tech Innovators Podcast, powered by Gusto. On this show, we explore the intersection of fintech, vertical SaaS, and how software combats the rising complexity of running a business. Our goal is to share stories, advice, and best practices from the leaders and investors behind today's cutting-edge platforms. This episode of the SMB Tech Innovators Podcast is brought to you by Gusto Embedded. Gusto has spent a decade building and testing its payroll, tax filing, and compliance infrastructure, which is available as a robust set of APIs so you can develop custom-tailored payroll solutions. For more information, go to embedded.gusto.com. Here's your host, Brian Bush.
On this episode of the SMB Tech Innovators Podcast, my guest is Will Young, the CEO and co-founder of Sana Benefits, which offers small business employees a concierge doctor in their pocket for free, bundled with an affordable health plan from their employer. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
I'm excited to dive into this one. Why don't you give us just a little bit deeper, what or who is Sana? And importantly, what was the path that led you and your co-founders to start the business?
Sure. Yeah. So Sana Benefits, what we do is we are trying to make health plans work better for small business employers and their employees. My co-founder, Nathan, and I started the business 6 years ago. We'd been working at a company called JustWorks. That's a PEO that does payroll and benefit software. And we were looking around this ecosystem of software and services for supporting entrepreneurs, early stage, small company entrepreneurs. And we thought, what's the missing piece? What's the piece that needs the most improvement? And the biggest piece to us seemed like it was health insurance. It was this huge expense that was always frustrating for employers and their employees to deal with. And what we did is we built a full stack health plan from the ground up, oriented around this customer, the small business customer. And as part of that journey, we realized that it's not just a financial product that you're offering. It's also this mediation layer between the member and the healthcare system. And we thought that needed an update as well. So we built a virtual primary care practice that we make available, bundled these health plans free to the member. And so not only do you get really great medical insurance with Sana, but you also get access to a team of primary care physicians and nurses that are responsive to you around the clock to help with any need you have.
I have to say, you picked a big, hairy, tough area of running a small business to try and fix, and to tag it from the ground up is incredible. So let's dive in just a little. I think we need to start by defining a few terms for folks for the rest of the episode before we get into a little bit more detail, kind of how that experience is different for your small business customers and their employees. First, could you give us the quick primer on, let's start with, hey, just some basic terms. What is fee-for-service and what is a value-based care model in healthcare and any other sort of models today that are out there that folks should know before we dive in?
Sure. Healthcare and insurance have more acronyms and obscure esoteric terminology than we've got time for on the podcast. But I think you picked a couple of very important terms from our perspective, which is fee-for-service and value-based care. It's no secret that healthcare in the US is incredibly expensive. And one of the reasons is the payment models incentivize higher costs and more utilization because doctors get paid. Doctors and hospitals get paid per service. So you get paid per doctor's visit and per drug that gets prescribed, right, or filled. And that model incentivizes more utilization of more expensive products. And it doesn't necessarily incentivize taking care of the health of the patients. For a long time in the healthcare industry, people have been trying to move towards more value-based care, which is compensating doctors and hospitals for the actual outcomes they're producing, right? So it's not about just as many doctor's visits as you can offer, but it's about, is the patient getting healthy? And there's a variety of ways that you can achieve that value-based care outcome or structure that payment model. But from Sana's perspective, what we do is we offer this virtual care practice to our members for free and then incentivize doctors to care about the patients that need their attention the most, not about maximizing the number of visits they get. It's just a change in payment model that changes the incentives of the system and hopefully leads to better care outcomes for patients and, you know, a better experience for doctors as well.
Okay. I want to dive into how that works in a moment, but also there's a lot else that's been changing in the health insurance market in general. What other trends, you know, if there's been a rise or a shift towards value-based care, what other dynamics are sort of at play in the market over the past 6 years as you've been founding this business?
Quite a few. I mean, I think the biggest trend that's most important, zooming way out, is the total share of our economy that goes to healthcare has been growing. And now it's, I think, just north of 20% of our total GDP flows through the healthcare system. And if you rewind the clock 50, 60 years, it was more like 5% of GDP. And so healthcare continues to grow faster than the rest of the economy. And Americans pay for that in a variety of ways. There's the explicit cost of your insurance. There's the taxes that then go to pay for Medicare and Medicaid. And there's your out-of-pocket expenses for things you do. And so why is that cost rising? I would point to really high regulatory barriers that makes it quite hard to start a company like Sana. Ever since the World War II, where a lot of the regulatory framework was set up that we currently live with employer-sponsored healthcare, ever since then, we've just added layers and layers of regulations at the national and state level. And it makes it quite hard to start a new health insurer like Sana. And that lack of competition means higher prices for customers ultimately. So there's more consolidation at the insurer level. Locally, market by market, there's a lot of consolidation of providers. Hospital systems are becoming more and more concentrated and more oligopolistic in any given metro area. So you have fewer and fewer competing providers, which means rates go up. And in general, I think the care has gotten a lot more complex as we make advances in more specialized domains. There is a real technical problem of how you coordinate all these different specialties. And that complexity combined with the fee-for-service model has meant there hasn't really been solutions that drive costs lower in the same way in other domains. That complexity manifests as a worse experience and higher expense. And I think these trends in time will change as more and more entrepreneurs attack this problem. But for now, the American consumer, the American employer are really feeling the brunt of these negative trends.
Props to you and the team for leaning in and founding a new insurer where clearly the regulation makes that extremely difficult. So let's dive in a little bit more, kind of one layer deeper on what makes Sana different. What I'm hearing already, you've mentioned several parties. There's how you pay the different providers. There's the employee experience in terms of having the access to that virtual concierge doctor for free. And then there's, you mentioned sort of a mediation layer for the employer, maybe how they interact with their health insurance carrier. And I may have that quite a little bit wrong, but it feels like there are three different parties, which is already speaking to the complexity of the business you've chosen to dive into. But you can take those in any order. But let's talk a little bit more about how Sana is different for those key parties.
So what makes Sana different? I think the first thing that makes Sana different is our focus on small businesses, which I think is relevant to this podcast. And small businesses just have different needs than large businesses. The ecosystem of vendors that they work with is different. They need more like one-stop shop solutions. The sort of enterprise sale and custom implementation work that you see with larger SaaS companies doesn't work in the small end of the market. The unit economics are very different. And so the kinds of go-to-market strategies that work are very different. So there's a lot about the small business segment that is just inherently different. And that's true across any product you might sell to small businesses. And so the first thing is that our health plan is designed for that small business employer. And we built our go-to-market strategy. We built our product strategy around making a really simple, easy sale that solves the need of that entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the difference in the actual health insurance product as a financial product. You have to buy this and then offer it to your employees. From the employee side, the incumbent health insurers are really not offering a service people like. If you have to pick up the phone and call Aetna, that's not an exciting thing for you. You're basically anticipating hours on the phone being handed around to different people who are not going to solve your problem. It's a waste of time, a waste of money. You're probably not going to get your issue resolved. That's the state of affairs of health insurance. And that's in addition to getting surprise bills and having those bills be way higher than you think they're supposed to be, going step by step through a health system without any support where you have to navigate it and you're waiting long periods of time between appointments and you can't figure out what you need to do. That is the status quo of our healthcare system. What we've tried to do is to work backwards from what an ideal patient experience would look like and then create the service and tech infrastructure that enables a better pathway. And so the main thing we do there is really great customer service. Right. So we hire people and we tell them we're not holding our customer support department accountable for call times, like getting through as many calls as possible. We care about net promoter score. We care about what members say about the service experience they're getting. And so we really invest in high quality customer support. And then for the more complex care needs, like when people are not just trying to figure out where their medical ID card is or what their deductible is, for the more complex needs, which is I have, you know, cancer or I'm having a baby or some complex medical need, or even just I need an annual checkup, we've got our virtual care practice that we make really low friction to actually just start a conversation with a doctor. And getting that expert advice as you're trying to navigate this system, it's more than just reactive service and support. It's actually delivering care, right? We've got a medical group that is actually delivering care virtually to our members and helping them understand their options and get prescriptions and get medical equipment mail to order. So we actually resolve a lot of medical issues virtually. So providing the care ourselves and providing really great navigation, really great service, that's how we transform that patient experience.
There are care providers that you work with that are not just the virtual care practice you've built. So one thing that's really interesting, I think stands out when you just read Sana's website, is this idea of treating any provider as if they're, quote, in network. And I think the assumption that's behind that, or the thing that we all know but is worth stating, is with my health insurer, the, quote, out-of-network providers can be wildly more expensive than the in-network providers. So I think the question is, how are you able to treat any provider as if they're in-network?
So there's two sides of this. Having a doctor in-network, it does a couple of things. The first thing is it makes the ease of getting an appointment and seeing that doctor a little bit smoother, because the doctor's offices care about whether you're in network, just like you as a member care that the doctor's office is in network, because they want to make sure that they're going to get paid on time and a reasonable rate and all that. So there's the access side, and then there's the financial side, which is this affordable? Is this rate reasonable? On both of those, what Sana does is instead of putting the risk on the member of navigating this out-of-network world and having it be buyer beware, it's on the patient to figure that out. We assume that risk. We internalize it. We say, look, looking across all of our data, we're pretty confident we can get rates for out-of-network providers within a reasonable range. And then we build that into our underwriting model. And likewise, often these out-of-network providers, they want to see that patient. And so we've made contracting process really streamlined. So what often happens is a patient wants to see a doctor that we don't already have an existing contract with, and we'll just sign that doctor up right away. We have really proactive provider contracting. We've got a team that reaches out within a day or two, generally gets contracts turned around really quickly. And so often out-of-network providers become in-network providers very quickly. And if they don't, there's a variety of other sort of mechanisms where if a patient ends up paying out of pocket, we reimburse them within a couple of business days. We have rapid reimbursement. Mm-hmm. We've just built the infrastructure to smooth over these rough edges that the health system exposes to the patient. And we can't protect them from everything, but we certainly try, and we try and build the experience that we would want to have navigating those different trade-offs.
Yeah, I love that phrase. You're smoothing over. It sounds like really hiding the rough edges. What I'm hearing you say is when you think about the buying experience and the product design for small businesses, you've really dialed in and made it really easy for folks to buy health insurance, taken away and hidden a lot of the complexity, hidden a lot of the challenge on that side. And then for the members, for the employees themselves, you've put an incredible amount of work into smoothing and facilitating that interaction with the healthcare system, which is big and complex and frankly scary at times. And this idea of you figured out how to hide so much of the complexity behind Sana's services is pretty amazing.
Thank you for saying that. I think it's just what you need to do with small businesses. And it's really what you should do with everyone in the ecosystem. Whether you're at a large company or a small company or on the individual plan or Medicare, Medicaid, there should be products out there that do smooth those rough edges. But in particular with small businesses, you can't put a complicated product in front of these folks. They're too busy. They've got too many competing priorities. There's no in-house specialist that understands deeply the ins and outs of network nuances. And so you have to build a product that is simple enough and it does what it says on the box. That's the only way you make a product work in this segment.
Sage advice, I'm sure anyone listening can take away. It's also a great segue, given that buying health insurance traditionally has been really complex, or the products have been complex. And I think the analog that we talk about a lot on this show is the universe or the network of expert advisors who help small businesses deal with specialties where folks got into the bakery because they love to bake. They didn't get into it to be an accountant. They didn't get into it to learn how to integrate different technology tools. And they certainly didn't get into it to become a health insurance expert. And so there's this network of brokers out there who, in theory, provide that expert advice or play that role to help buyers or the small businesses understand it. So I'm curious about Sana's relationship to the broker channel, if you will. I'm curious if you see them, if you think that's an adequate way to characterize it. Like, are brokers in this space that expert advisor? And how do you interact with that broker channel?
It's a great question. And I think the context that you've offered around how a bakery might need an expert advisor in a variety of domains, that's spot on. And that's certainly how buyers feel like they need someone to walk them through this decision. And I think technology does. One of the theories that we had at the start of Sana was maybe we don't need brokers, right? If we can just make things simple enough and streamlined enough that we made that, if we reduce the cognitive burden of deciding what to do with health insurance, you might not need that intermediary in the middle. If you answered all their questions and concerns using different sequences of web pages and better design and messaging and maybe better FAQs and help center documents, maybe you could create a self-serve checkout experience. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that philosophy underlies a lot of design at Gusto. It certainly did at JustWorks. Like, how can you make things self-serve automated while still being as good and solving that user mm-hmm. need? But the reality is the vast majority of the market out there, that bakery, they're not necessarily self-serve signing up on a web platform. Their behavior when they are trying to buy, like their actual decision-making process for the purchase, is they talk to people. They talk to their friends, and their friends will recommend a broker. And that broker does fill a very important need for that person, a feeling of psychological safety around the decision and then presenting the different options. And one of the things that colored my experience is there's tremendous variance in the brokers out there. Like, some of them are incredibly good at being that expert advisor. Some of them are just churning out as many policies as they can. And I don't begrudge those folks either, but there's different levels of service, different levels of advice and consultation you get. And small businesses in particular struggle because the value of their policies to these brokers is just much lower. It scales proportionally with the size of the employees. So a 100-person company is literally 50 times as valuable as a 2-person company to these brokers. And the service levels available for that very small end up being much lower. And so I think there are some opportunities at the very low end to step in where brokers don't see the value in serving the customers. And then there's a big space where, yeah, there's going to be some self-serve, direct-to-consumer, go-to-market. But then a huge chunk of the market is still going to be broker-driven. And that's the reality that we're in. There have been companies that have tried to really disintermediate or disrupt the brokers, like Zenefits is an example, where they just really went out there and tried to take a totally different approach and ran into a lot of problems in doing that, both sort of regulatory and competitive problems, but also they weren't providing the services that customers really wanted out of that sort of trusted intermediary. And that was problematic for them too.
Yeah.
Brokers are here to stay. They add different amounts of value. And so many of them add a lot of value. And we very happily work with brokers.
I think the point you made about, yes, a broker can prevent or present options. Yes, a broker helps obviously broker the sale. But in a sense, the value they provide is that idea of psychological safety. I think that's a really interesting point. And where I think on the Gusto side, we think a lot about this too, because trust, compliance, are critical to running payroll accurately on behalf of customers. That idea, to what extent can you create that or replicate that idea of psychological safety for customers via software interface? And of course, as you get into, there's a range of buying preferences out there that some prefer that, some don't. I think that's a fascinating point in terms of really where the value of some of these expert advisors comes down to. Might just be that at the end of the day, I've talked to another person I feel really safe about the decision I'm making here, rather than I've just read it on a website.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think the changeover of people buying through people and people buying through software, that's a generational change. And so many of the companies that we sell to, they have business owners that have been doing things one way for 20 years. And even if they could conceivably shave a few percentage points off of their rates by doing something in a more self-serve way, they just don't want to do it. And I think there'll be a generational shift. And I think brokerages are also, they're smart. They're going to figure out ways to cost effectively serve the lower end as well. And they're going to build tools and services that meet those needs. I think the ecosystem will evolve. Thinking about myself, my decision-making process for new products and services, I prefer self-serve flow. Mm-hmm. You know, that I can't project that experience onto other people, because the truth is the vast majority of people today still prefer a more conventional mode of buying.
It's also a great point that there is a generational shift happening. There's a younger generation coming in running these businesses. This is a great transition as well to, hey, Asana's website, kind of this idea of psychological safety. There are several references on your website to PEOs or professional employment organizations and partnerships, say with a company called Mineral, but that provide an HR professional to answer questions for your customers and members. And at the end of the day, what this is coming back to is where health insurance or health benefits connect to how your customers manage their people, how they keep them happy, how they keep them productive. So I'm curious, this gets a little bit into product strategy. Does it feel like to you, your customers are really looking for something of a single platform to manage as much of their people issues, but just to manage as much people as their people platform as possible? Or do you feel like there are just some really logical but point connections to some of these other tools that have come up along the way?
It's a great question, and it's a debate that we have internally quite a bit, or at least we had in the past. I think we've got more direction now. And your question is spot on. Small businesses really do want a one-stop shop. Reduces costs, it reduces complexity. They want to sort of manage everything in one place. The implication for our product strategy would then be, okay, we should build everything then. We should mimic all the features of a PEO. We should do payroll. We should do compliance work. We should do HR support. We should offer all these ancillary benefits and services to meet every need. And we have done that to some degree. But then on the other side, you have to say, what are we really great at? And what is differentiated about our business? And what sort of secrets have we uncovered and how the world works that we can actually make something better? And I think a lot of our insights, a lot of our expertise and advantage is on the healthcare specific side of things. Yes, we've done pretty well with go-to-market. So I think building a platform that works for small businesses, it is valuable. But there are companies like Gusto and like JustWorks and a handful of others that really are the best in class at getting their payroll products in front of small businesses at business formation and then adding on these services after the fact. I don't think that's where we're going to win big. I think where we win big is transforming how the healthcare and health insurance piece works. When we think about where are we going to invest our product and engineering time and where are we going to be innovative from an operational design perspective, we're really focused on the healthcare side. And that, in that way, we hope to be complementary to these other players in the ecosystem. But there is some tension with that because customers come to us and they want a single platform to solve everything. And we have to give them an experience that, yeah, we don't do payroll, but we do all the benefits and we can connect to your payroll system. We have to allow for a little bit of friction there. And then hopefully they get such a differentiated product on the healthcare side. That's not a big deal. Obviously, there are things like embedded payroll that potentially make building that payroll product a little bit simpler. And I think there are these enabling technologies that make it easier to be a one-stop shop with all the different pieces in place. And we're trying to take advantage of those as they make sense. Mm-hmm. But when we think about where we invest our time and energy, we try and do it in the place where we think we've got a singular advantage.
That makes sense. And I want to wrap up with advice you would give. I feel like you've shared some incredible nuggets already today. One, if you're working with small businesses, product design is just critical because it's not just, does it provide a great experience, a user experience to the customer? Does it fit with a go-to-market model? Does it fit with the unit economics that are inherent in this segment? Two, as you just said, really dialing in and having a clear understanding internally of what are you differentiated on? Where can you get the most leverage and investing the majority of your time and effort there while still keeping an eye on the periphery, if you will, or what user demands are asking for in terms of connection to other sort of surface area for the product. You're building something new in a space that, as you said, has so much regulation, these large incumbents only getting larger with consolidation. What other advice would you have for anybody else who's thinking about starting a business who wants to change healthcare, say the way you do, but or any other regulated industry in terms of how do you think about starting a good company, building a great product in spite of all of the regulation that you face these days?
So when we started Sauna, Nathan and I, we knew pretty much nothing about healthcare, which is dangerous. Like, not only were we trying something really audacious, but we didn't have the expert backgrounds to say, oh, this is something that you should be able to do. And I think what I would say there is a beginner's mindset and being somewhat naive about the problem you're tackling is a huge asset because it allows you to more easily sort of reason from first principles, right? You're not anchored to the way things are done. If you're asking the sort of dumb questions all the time, you learn the reason why things exist in a way that you might not if you were in industry. So I'd say some advice if you're building in a regulated space is don't be afraid to tackle a problem that seems intimidating and esoteric and beyond your domain. It's okay to be naive. And in fact, it can be a big advantage to rethink things from the ground up. At the same time, then you have to recognize what you don't know and then really invest in learning. And for us, we had to read a bunch of regulations. We weren't just like looking at what was out there in the world and saying, oh, we could build another one of these or those. We went and read ERISA, which is the sort of governing document for self-insured health plans, which is the financial structure we've set up. And we read the state level regulations. And then we went to these conferences and talked with the vendors and asked them detailed questions about what every single one of them did and did software demos with all the technology providers and thought, okay, some of these we need, some of these we don't, some of these we'll build in-house. And we built the full architecture and full perspective of what we wanted to from the ground up. And I think we only were really able to do that because we approach things with a beginner's mindset. So if you're trying to build in a regulated space, don't be intimidated by how much you don't know or how much regulation is out there, but then do your homework and the result can be something really compelling.
I love that, Will. Beginner's mindset plus to your homework. I feel like I've heard similar anecdotes from many investors who invest in financial services or fintech these days. A lot of anecdotes about new founders who didn't come from the industry had that beginner mindset, but it, like you said, got smart fast in their industry. Thank you so much for joining us today. Before we wrap up, if listeners want to connect with you online or ask additional questions, go deeper on any of the topics, how is it best to connect or to find you online?
I'm on Twitter. I think my handle is whynot15, W-Y-N-O-T-15. But yeah, you can reach out. I'm also will@saunabenefits.com. So feel free to reach out and we'd love to talk to anybody in your audience that is interested in learning more.
Fantastic. And I hope folks, even if we're selling different products to small businesses, take a look at Sauna and let their customers know because you're offering, I think, an incredible product. Will, again, thank you for taking the time to join us today and share some of your insights.
Thank you, Brian. Enjoyed it.
Thanks again for tuning into this episode of the SMB Tech Innovators Podcast. We'll make sure to link to any resources that were mentioned in today's show in the show notes. Please also feel free to leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcast or to connect with the Gusto Embedded team via LinkedIn. In particular, we'd love to hear any future guests you'd like us to have on the show. Thanks again for listening and keep a lookout for the next episode.